meeting, and we want to welcome the delegation led by the chairperson of the CIRA board, Mr. Botella. We also want to welcome members and anyone who is in this meeting to attend. You're most welcome to the meeting. Our agenda today is on looking into the annual report 2010-11 for CIRA Private Security Net Regulatory Authority. Let me first welcome and appreciate the fact that for once we will be engaging with the department or the unit that received from the Auditor General an unqualified audit opinion. And really, we believe that these are the good news because they indicate that we're moving from somewhere to somewhere. And we're saying this understanding the issues and matters that the Auditor General raised. However, we are really appreciating the fact that after a long time, today we are at a stage where we are saying CIRA received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General. For that, we want to say well done, and we looking forward to even a better managed industry that is responding to the many challenges that are on the ground that are related to private security industry. There are many of them. And as the portfolio committee, I think we'll have to find time to focus on what is happening on the ground vis-a-vis what is reported to us at this level. We'll find ways and means of addressing just that aspect, because this is one entity that we've not had time to interact with it at the level of what is happening practically. With the portfolio committee going to those areas. However, at this stage, we want to welcome the unqualified audit opinion that you received. It had to take a lot from yourself to be where we are and where you are. Good as the Auditor General raised quite a number of issues when addressing us here, I think they were quite optimistic issues that they raised as problematic. They are hoping that this management will be in a position to address them over some time. So we welcome that as well. That does not, however, mean that there aren't issues that the portfolio committee is really worried about and concerned about. Those issues will be raised as we interact and continue interacting with CIRA today. Secondly, I would want to take this opportunity to welcome the announcement by the President yesterday, first of instituting, as per the sub-act, an inquiry related to alleged misconduct by National Commissioner Betty Brent. We believe that the President continues to act within the law. The National Commissioner can never be fired, as it would probably happen to a minister and so on, because he is an administrator, he's a manager, and the act stipulates exactly as to what should happen, and the President is following the act up to the letter, and we appreciate that. and we want to welcome that position. We believe that, as we have always said as the portfolio committee, that from any quarter and anyone, there must be consequences for any wrongdoing or alleged wrongdoing. I want to believe that the board will actually inquire into all the things surrounding the lease, the leases, and come up with findings, and of course present them to the president, so that the president can then, on the basis of what they will say, take a decision. We also want to take this opportunity to welcome the appointment of a Nhlanhla Sibusiso Mkhwanazi as the acting national commissioner. We always ask questions in our meeting when we think that things went wrong at a particular stage, and individuals are blamed to say, but where were you when these decisions were taken? It is my firm belief that it would have been, and I think it is correct, to appoint somebody who probably would normally not have been part of the decisions that are surrounding the decision by the president to suspend the national commissioner. And on that, we are appreciating the decision. I also believe that in terms of the experience, the qualifications, the acting national commissioner will be equal to the task. Having obtained his BTEC degree in policing, national diploma in policing, having other qualifications which he obtained from institutions, including Africa Institution for Mentoring, South African Police Service, where he was trained as operational commander training from U.S. Department of Justice Federal Bureau of Investigation on supervisory role in counterterrorism investigation, having obtained training on crisis response team training from Louisiana State University, USA, bomb disposal from South African Police Service, development program for higher performance managers from International Paul Tengel Management Services, and quite a number of others, special task force operators training, public order police operations. We think all this, they make him qualified to be an effective acting national commissioner. He's never been promoted on the basis of the sections we're worried about. I had an opportunity to speak to a person who interviewed him for the Major General position, and the one thing that individual said to me is that he's intelligent and he qualified and deserved to be promoted. So it's never been something that comes maybe because of connection, but whatever that he's obtained in SAS, his work for his ended. And for one, I appreciate that very much. For now, we know for a fact that his position has been that of being the section head of Special Task Force as per the Constitution of the Republic, and has been acting head specialized operations that include managing all specialized operational sections, which are the National Air Wing, National Intervention Unit, Special Task Force, as well as cross-border operations. There are quite a number of others where he worked and therefore has a vast experience in the police. talking about command and control, I think this is what we probably might expect. It's been quite a long time that some have been saying maybe we need somebody who is a policeman to lead the police. Probably this will give us a taste of that over that period over which he will end. He does have experience on South African police officials. In fact, he once worked as South African police officials deployed to the African Union meeting in Mozambique, South African police officials deployed to the centenary celebration of IET in West Indies, South African police officials deployed to Commonwealth Health Heads of Government meeting in Uganda, South African police officials deployed for the general elections of the Comoros Island or Anjouan in 2006, and Operation Rachel Mozambique in 2008. And therefore, on behalf of the chairperson and probably ourselves, we really want to welcome the appointment of Nkandla Sibusiso Mkhwanazi as the acting national commissioner. We will work with him until such time that the president decides as to what position it's going to take with regards to the incumbent, that is the national commissioner, and of course maybe appointing another national commissioner at whatever time is and when the president decides. We welcome all that was announced yesterday. We will therefore move on to probably the very fact that we have a relatively young acting national commissioner. For me, I think it's positive, and I think it's going to assist us. It's going to bring new energetic minds into the police, coupled with his experience, qualification. We hope to have a very effective acting national commission. We will move on to our agenda for today and allow Kira to present report, finance, as well as the Auditor General's report. After that, we will then financial statement affairs, and then after that, we'll allow members to ask questions. If it is possible, we will wish to close the meeting at upper stress, depending, of course, on how fast we move, and that does not mean that we will not ask questions. Depending on how long you take making your presentation and how long you take responding to questions, if you have not responded to some of the questions, you then respond in writing. And it will depend on how fast you move. Thank you very much, and that's enough of that point.
I'd like to thank the Honorable Madam Chair for welcoming us to this meeting and for the kind remarks that she has made. And I would also like to greet and thank the members of the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee I'd like also to introduce Ms. Siziwe Zuma, who is Manager Communication. The two councillors, we were hoping that we would have a full quorum of the council, five of us. These two additional members of the council need to have security clearance, top secret. We were not aware of that because they come from an area where we did not think a security clearance would be necessary. One of them comes from NIA, and since we all go to NIA to get security clearances, we thought that a person coming from that area would automatically be allowed to join us. But I've been assured by Mr. Maketuba, the DG, that he's going to facilitate that, and then everything would be in place. Probably when we come back next time, we will have the full quota of the members of the council. Passing on from there, I'd like to say that I'm going to be brief and not steal Mr. Chauke's thunder by saying things that are in the presentation. It is presentation, and those and some parts of it will be dealt with by, according to his discretion, the deputy directors. Briefly, we have come here to just state plainly where we found CIRA, what was wrong with CIRA, what we have done to correct what has been happening, and we inherited all those things that were done then and the misery that was caused. We have come also to say what we have done, where CIRA is at today, and we would like to project with your assistance where CIRA should in the near future be and what is necessary from our point of view for that to happen. I'd like to leave it at that high level and ask Madam Chair to permit the Director, Mr. Manabela Chauke, to proceed with the presentation. Thank you very much, Madam, and the Honourable Members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, all guests today that are here. Madam Chair, just as the overview of our presentation, I will just take the committee through to our agenda. I will touch on the last annual report briefing that we had last year, the issues that were raised there. Just briefly, things that we needed to go and rectify. I will also touch on the core business report, which is the a snapshot of the analysis of some of the trends, without actually going through every page of the annual report. And I will also touch on the organizational performance, and I will also hand over to my colleague, Mr. Nicodemus Ligege, to give you an overview of the financial results and as well as the action plan that we have prepared for the annual the Auditor General's report, and also to touch on the legislative development for our industry. Madam Chair, let me move on to the last briefing. During last year's briefing, there were a number of issues that were highlighted, some of which have been rectified. It's not a full list of everything that was highlighted then. I think of importance then was the issue of which led to the qualification, the issue of the VAT deregistration. We have since resolved the matter with the South African Revenue Services, Madam Chair. The VAT has been deregistered, and the liability that was there has been also reversed. That is then the liability of 16 million, which was recorded at the time. on matters of compliance, we had issues that were raised, which actually were matters of emphasis, which related to the risk management, related to procurement, strategic plan, and the approval of the strategic plan, the retention of the surplus, as well as matters of the audit committee. I think the first one, the risk management aspect, risk management process is already in place. That has been resolved. The procurement policies are also in place and have been implemented. Therefore, we've resolved that as well. The strategic plan have been prepared in terms of and in line with the PFMA as well as the requirements of Treasury, and as such it has been approved. The National Treasury has also approved our request to have the surplus that was accumulated to be retained, and that also is a matter that has been approved. And we've already earlier on in February also reported the fact that the audit committee has been appointed last year in November. I think that was after the presentation that we had with the portfolio committee. Madam Chair, that is in a nutshell the issues that were raised during the last briefing. I'm going to move on to the analysis of some of the trends that we have on our core business. I'm very cognizant of time, Madam Chair, so I will move to analyze the very first slide. It's compliance inspections that were conducted during the financial year. And again, this is a summary of what is in the annual report. I have not taken everything, just a snapshot of those that I think requires to be highlighted. On the differences between what we've achieved last year and what we've achieved this current financial year, we pick up a trend on the infrastructure inspections, which actually have gone up compared to the previous year, and that is the reason for that is obviously a little bit of an increase in the registration of security companies, and we also pick up a decrease on the first-time inspection. That is a very, very slight decrease, and that is, of course, the reason for that is the revision of the objectives that we set for law enforcement last year, which at a later stage I'll give full reasons for the revision that we've had. Moving on to the next slide. That deals with the inspections according to the service providers. Now, that is just the numbers to show the distribution of resources in terms of the service providers, and as well as to highlight the numbers there. As we can see, the large businesses has decreased slightly, and in inspections of the small businesses remain at the average compared to last year. So that is the numbers there are quite very consistent with what we had last year. There isn't a big actually jump on the numbers there. The next one is the analysis of the dockets that we are opened in respect of the investigations that were conducted on the mainly on the code of conduct of the service providers. And there we see an increase in the compliance level by small companies. And that is indicated by the reduction in the number, but it's not such a very big increase because compared to last year, you have 991 dockets, and with this current financial year, we have 826, which actually to us says that there is a little bit of compliance move on the small companies as compared to the bigger companies in terms of the compliance with the code of conduct. Moving forward is the issue of the firearms applications that were processed at CIRA. We note that there is an increase on the number of applications that were turned down from our side. The process really entails when security companies apply for firearms with the South African Police Services, the South African Police Services would then submit to us the request and request us to check whether in terms of registrations the companies have been registered, do they have the required number of people that they claim to have, in terms of the number of firearms licenses that they've requested or they've applied for, and we would then assess those applications with that criteria, including the fact other issues of compliance and so on, including checking who the responsible person is. And the number talks to the number of those that we sent to the subs. You cannot grant these people licenses because of the following reasons and so on. So we see that it has been an increase in that, meaning that we have actually beefed up our analysis in terms of what the criteria that needs to be followed in terms of saying these are the correct people. And I think that later on will also perhaps come up when the questions are asked regarding the number of registrations and so on, Madam Chair. That is, in a nutshell, Madam Chair, the analysis of the trends. I think the full outline is on the numbers, including some of which I have not actually picked on, is in the annual report. It will be prepared to, in fact, welcome questions on that later on. I just wanted to move on prior to actually moving on to the core business analysis and the performance of the against the objectives, Madam Chair, to explain that you will notice on the performance report that there has been a column that is written revised goals as well as the original target as well as the revised target. And we just want to give reasons why those goals have to be revised at the time. When I say we, I'm referring to now the director as well as the deputy director of finance and deputy director of law enforcement. After the previous management had left CIRA, we then took over and we had to review the documents that were before us at the time. And we realized that there's a few shortcomings that we needed to actually revise. The revision is perfectly in terms of the Treasury regulations. In fact, it's actually allowed. The reasons for that is that there were certain targets which were reflected on the original strategic plan which was not achievable. So we had to revise that. The original plan did not also indicate certain quarterly targets, which actually the timing would have been very much out. We also had to revise that the original strategic objectives were not linked to the approved budget, so there was not a correct alignment to that. We also had to revise that. There was no link between the original strategy plan and the divisional plans, and therefore that has to be revised so that it's actually in line with the requirements. We had also, at a later stage, had to reprioritize some of the law enforcement issues, in order to, for instance, clear the backlog that was there. And that I mean that we had to, with regard to the number of inspections that were conducted at the time, we had to reduce the number of the travel so that we reduce the cost. And because at that time we went into a cost-cutting exercise in order to make sure that we do not actually go deeper into the red. Therefore, we concentrated on saying there is more dockets that have been compiled which needs to be put through to the prosecution than to go out and accumulate more and more dockets than we can actually prosecute. So let's concentrate on the inspectors. If they were to go out for a full month, the 2 to 2 weeks would be dedicated to doing inspections. And the 2 weeks will be dedicated to actually finishing up the admin so that we are able to move the cases as quickly as possible. And that later on has actually given us very good results, which we will talk to later on. The other reason is, of course, the financial constraints, which led to us reprioritizing some of the objectives. I think that we had to revise the objectives, Madam Chair. We also welcome questions on that at the later stage. Let me at this stage move on to talking to the programs that we've actually revised at this stage. On program number one, the revised goal was the effective management of the working capital, which was original target was 95%, and we've revised it to a ratio of 1:1, and actually the performance therefore is the 1:2:1, so the target was actually exceeded, and the reason for that was there was an increase in the tariff structure that we had as part of the strategy that we had, the interim strategy, to review and to try to see that we survived that era of financial crisis. We had to review some of the fee structures that we had. And additional to that, the review of the fee structure, the tariff structure, which mainly related to the disbursements, that was also the it was no original target there. I think the target that we had then was December 2010, and we've managed to have that review of the structure approved by council on time, and it was implemented on the 1st of February. We also had to ensure that goods corporate governance is in place, and as per the opinion of the Auditor General. And as a result of that, we've also achieved that, the target, by achieving an unqualified report, as the Madam Chair already alluded to during his introduction of the program today. On program number two, Madam Chair, the program was to reduce the risk of the state and South African citizens through industrial compliance with the CIRA Act, and the revised goal was to develop a compliance model. The key indicator was the date of completion, March 2011. The compliance model was approved by March 2011, and that has been achieved. And just to give a little bit of a background, when we actually joined the organization, we found that there was no strategic plan to enforce the industry. There was only a concentration on the numbers, so we actually had to ensure that there is a particular model of compliance that is followed. We've also achieved that. Parallel to that, we also have to conduct, as part of the revised goals, the effective inspections of the industry. There, we actually needed to actually revise the numbers. The original target was 7,500 inspections and 720 site visits, which is also inspections, and the revised was 6,575 inspections and 800 site visits. So we had a little bit of an increase on the site visits. The inspections conducted was 6,611 conducted, and 257 criminal cases were registered as a result of 1,394 site visits which have been carried out. So that was also achieved. The increased site investigation program and the operations with SARS actually were responsible for this kind of achievement, Madam Chair. Continuing on the program, we also had to take appropriate action to compile dockets, as I've said. The number of dockets that were compiled against the compliance security providers, 1,800 dockets. The revised target was 1,600. We achieved 1,474. We could not achieve the target. And the reason for that is that earlier on we had to reprioritize some of the programs of the inspectors in order to clear the backlogs. So the redeployment of the inspectors as well as the vacancies were actually also responsible for that kind of a variance in that performance aspect. The percentage of cases at hand, the original target was 70%. The revised, the target was left as it was. 1,331 of the 1,342 were finalized, so 77% was the achievement, and again the reason for the variance was the actual redeployment of inspectors and the interim turnarounds initiatives which we had, which were responsible for saying to some of the inspectors, as I said, we will conduct 2 weeks in the office and 2 weeks outside so that we actually clear the backlog. Moving on to program three. We had to develop an enabled environment for CIRA to be able to operate effectively and efficiently. The revised goal, first goal that we had to revise, was to develop an IT strategy, which we have achieved. And the IT strategy is currently in place. The original target was June 2010. The revised one was in March. And part of the reason for that is that we did not have capacity in the IT environment, so we had to actually also wait for the appointment of the IT senior manager. We had to establish an IT steering committee, which is in place currently. The target was there was no target because at the time there was no IT committee. We then targeted December. The IT steering committee was established in November, therefore the target was also achieved. We also had to build internal IT capacity and to also come up with an exit plan for the suppliers that we had on the IT side. And our target was March, and that also has been achieved. As we speak, we have actually appointed quite a number of people who are now taking care of the IT at CIRA. And we will later on talk to our achievements on that side as well. We also had to establish and implement the regulatory subcommittee. The regulatory subcommittee is actually the committee that speaks to the compliance issues that we're facing. Just to give an example of that is when a company has been registered with us and later on found not to be compliant, the committee actually assists us in taking a decision whether to withdraw the license or to suspend it and so on. I think also we will talk to that later in the report as well. That has also been achieved. We also had to establish a registration subcommittee, and the reason for that is that there was a lot of non-compliance on the registration side. A number of companies which were not supposed to be registered were registered. Therefore, the registration committee actually helped us to assess the applications, both from individuals as well as foreigners and as well as the companies that applied for registration. And that was targeted for December 2010. We've actually achieved by setting up that committee in time. Moving on to program number four, we had to ensure effective and efficient management of human capital, that is now on the HR side. The revised goal was to implement the recommendations of the HR audit. The HR audit that took place was mainly to implement the job evaluation. The target was not achieved because the original target was in May 2010, and there was a delay. As a result, it was done in June due to the negotiations with the unions, and that is the reason for the non-achievement. The other key indicator was the completion date of the skills audit, which was due to be completed in September, and it was actually completed on time. We also had to develop future focus of organizational design in HR. The original target was June, and it was also finalized in June, therefore also achieved. Part of the other revised goals was to conduct a group employee induction once a year, And that was also achieved successfully because the group one was done, and we continue to also achieve on that score as well. We also had to develop and implement training and a development plan for our staff. The completion was from December 2010, and that was actually completed in June in time. Madam Chair, the next one was to implement an effective performance management system. The performance of inspectors with signed agreements. The original target was to actually ensure that all of them are actually in possession of those. And as we speak, we also achieved that target by ensuring that all of them have got their own specific performance contracts. The program number five, we had to ensure effective risk management, Madam Chair, actually is one of the points that I've highlighted on the last briefing in 2010. We've established a forensic and ethics unit, formerly known as the MIU, I think Integrity Management Unit. The target was June 2010, and it was actually achieved by establishing it in May 2010. And they're actually responsible for a number of achievements in terms of cleaning out corruption, etc. We also developed a fraud prevention policy, which was not in place. That was approved by council in October 2010, so it was also achieved. Program number six, we had to strengthen relationships with the key stakeholders through effective communication, and that is to participate in key stakeholder initiatives. The original target was to say we want to have at least 100% of our time in communication as well as devoted in that field. We have actually also managed to have a number of meetings with key provincial as well as other joint teams with SARPs and so on in preparation of the World Cup. And that was also an achievement of that goal as well, Madam Chair. The consultations regarding and process regarding the review of the legislation was also one of the goals that we've had as part of the goals that we revised. And we had the original target to complete the consultations in November 2010. The target was actually exceeded because we finalized according to our project plan in September and October 2010 at the time. So we've achieved that objective as well. The other objective that we revised was to contribute to the overall success of the World Cup, and through the participation of CIRA, the registration vetting conducted on the 15,248 employees, security officers, compliance reports submitted to NIA were achieved, which was actually part of the vetting of the World Cup. Therefore, we've achieved that as well. As part of the programs number six, the industry stakeholders liaising through complaints and help desk. The key performance indicator there was percentage of complaints received. The original target was 100%. The performance result is 100% considered with we received 23,644 inquiries, which were actually also personal inquiries, and that target was also achieved. And on program number seven, we had to develop a new corporate identity, as we have introduced last year when we did our first presentation on the second. We have now actually moved on to use that identity. That is actually the new emblem that you see, which is also the change in the annual report as well. The The completion was June 2010, and that was actually achieved in May. And we also had to develop, as part of the revised goal, a brand strategy. The completion date was actually the achievement that we were looking for. And in May, we actually achieved that by finalizing the implementation of that brand strategy. I think that is, in a nutshell, the performance against which we were measured at the time by Treasury Ministry. And that would be all from my side at this stage. I'm going to hand over to the Deputy Director of Law Enforcement to take you through the governance aspect and the financial results.
Thank you, Chairperson, for giving us the opportunity to present the financials. I'll just give you the high level. I'm going to present the financial performance of the authority, through the committee, where what are the reasons behind the deficit of 23.7 million, and also touch base on just the breakdown of the expenditure. Lastly, I'll deal with governance issues, which is mainly on the audit, our action plan on addressing more challenges on the internal control front. The financial performance of the authority, just to give a high level there, in the prior year we incurred a deficit of 2.2 million. And in this financial year, the deficit rose to 23.7 million. If you look at the revenue has remained constant at 2% because the annual fees have not necessarily been amended over those 2 years. The other income on the 17%, I will bring a breakdown later on, but it's more on the our turnaround initiatives that we did in the 6 months of the year from September. The drivers of revenue, just to give of the revenue in terms of for the authority, we employ several models in terms of our income, and mainly or significantly is driven by the volumes of security officers that are actively participating. The first one would be the number of registered security service providers. That means that for each security provider that is registered and actively employed, CIRA would have to charge a certain amount. So therefore, as the numbers decline, then the revenue will also follow suit. The second one is number of security officers that are employed by the above providers, because each security company will pay a particular amount, which is severance at this stage per month, for each security officer employed. The other key driver is also fines imposed in code of conduct inquiries. So when there are more contraventions of the Act, you find that the fines income also rises. The volume of training of court reports processed, which is a new fee that was implemented in February. So it was only 2 months of during the financial year. And also the volume of business and individual registration. The revenue background, as I indicated, the sale of goods and annual fees have marginally stayed constant at 4% and also 7% for those two. If you look at the fines, in the prior year, the fines income was just above 3 million. And in 2011, it rose to 5.5 million, representing an 85% increase. These are the interventions that were implemented, which meant that prioritization was made to push a lot of backlog of dockets. And in that 6 months, we managed to increase that to that extent. With respect to registration fees and infrastructure assessment fees, the decline is mainly due to the volume of those registrations, But mainly, as the director indicated, that we implemented a registration subcommittee. So there has been, that committee looks at the applications that are coming through. When you look at the controls that have been put in place in that environment, you can see that it's a bit more difficult now to get through the system without the necessary vetting that was not there before. Rental income, it was just a sublist which expired. We had rented one of our areas that we were not using just to recoup some money in the past, so that was not there in 2011. Interest and penalties is mainly due to the fact that if a debt is growing, interest and penalties are also high. Other income, that is the new fee income that we introduced in February. So in that 2 months, we managed to put an increase in that area of 26%. Then investment income, that is interest and in banks, has declined by 57%, mainly because we are depleting our cash resources. And overall, revenue stayed stagnant at 2%, but without certain of those interventions, then there would have been a worse position. With respect to expenditure background, we are indicating there that just the main items that are the employee benefits have risen by from 39 million to 57 million. That's a 47% increase. I will also indicate to the committee that part of the 57 million included in 2011, there's also an actuarial valuation which was done on our pension fund, which had an increase in terms of our expenditure on pension fund of 4.3 million. That is an accounting entry which is provided because the actuaries looked at the obligation of the fund depending on, because it's a defined benefit plan, depending on age of retirement, the salary, and so forth. The depreciation, one of the items that are also influenced the deficit is the fact that there was a lot of cleaning up when we did the financials. The depreciation change in estimates, we looked at a lot of assets and realized that some of the amounts that are there need to be impaired. Most of the assets were overstated. I'll give an example of when I looked at the asset register where there was a laptop of 1996, which was worth just above around 55,000. So we had to impair those assets because the values were overstated. The debt impairment is as a result of also where we looked at debt that is not collectible, that has been in the books. We wrote off in excess of 75 million worth of individual debts owed by individuals or security officers, which is legacy debt inherited from the previous security officers board, SOB. The fingerprint costs, obviously will also reduce because of the number of registrations that have declined. Where one looks at the consulting fees, that amount reduced mainly because of in the past there was high reliance on use of consultants in terms of doing accounting. In the previous year we spent 1.6 million on preparation of financial statements and cleaning up. And in this current year, we did not rely on consultants. That amount in terms of introducing the asset register and some of the functionalities on the finance, we only spent just around 130,000. So we are moving towards capacitating the finance division. Communication, we have now implemented at the there's an implementation of the usage of telephone where we monitor costs individuals. So you see a decline there in terms of, because we do recover costs relating to telephone and so forth. Travel and accommodation has declined by 31%, mainly as the director alluded to, that we reprioritize certain activities where inspectors would then spend less time doing inspections so that they can facilitate or expedite the completion of the docket or code of conduct inquiries. Rentals, in, increased by 6%. That's just a year-on-year increase, and other operating costs were contained at 5%. Just an overview on financial performance. We are saying that in terms of our current ratio, we have, as previously reported, the current ratio indicates that for every rent that we owe, how much do we have in the bank, and it has improved from 0.93, which is 93 cents, to 1.2. Therefore, it means that we do cover our liabilities with assets that we have. The accumulated surpluses are sitting at 11.4 million, coming from 17 million as previously reported. Cash resources have also declined by 10.7 million to 13.2 million, and mainly it's because of the fact that one had to fund the deficit from cash resources. Capital investments in technology amounting to 2.8 million was made during the year, leading to that decline in assets. During the year, around 2.8 million that was spent on assets was mainly on acquiring database licenses, acquiring new computer equipment, acquiring a new servers that we had to capacitate on the IT infrastructure side. Just to give an indication, the current status of the debtors, included in our debtors book, we wanted to give the committee the overview of where we are sitting. The total debt that has been classified as uncollectible, which was handed over to a debt collection agency, amounted to 145 million. And as at the end of the financial year, 5,500 cases amounting to 62 million could not be traced, and therefore we need to write that off, which constitutes 43% of our debt. Only 1,334 cases amounting to 6.4 million are paying. We are still tracing and inquiring on the balance, of which is just over 7.6 million accounts. And that's the picture of our current debtors. The irregular expenditure for the year amounted to 1 million. This is not only for the current financial year, it is as a result of entering into a contract which when in 2008, of which when the Auditor General requested the contract for this service that was rendered, there was no, the contract was not signed by the service provider, and therefore they classified it as an irregular expenditure. There is no reason to believe from our side that we have suffered a loss as a result of this transaction. This contract is for servicing agent transit for the entire SIRA in all the regional branches, and service has been rendered throughout since inception. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was declared, amounted to 12,000. And the first one, which was the high amount, was 9,600. As a result of where in 2009 penalties were levied to SIRA because the HR department at the time in 2009 submitted earnings that were incorrect, and therefore were penalized in 2010, and it was discovered only in 2010. Supply accounts, there is also an issue with late deliveries where we have been charged 2,000 rand. It's only 25 rand, and municipal accounts 422. And in most of these, we've implemented corrective action where we've made arrangements with debit order arrangements for certain type of supplies that are troublesome to avoid this in future. I'll move now to what is our plan on some of the matters that were raised by the Auditor General. The four areas that they mainly looked at was the financial management, revenue management, and supply chain. If the issue relating to the going concern, the Auditor General raised in his report that there is doubt that the authority can continue as a going concern in the future, and therefore we are plan for the authority is to increase the annual fee payable by the industry. We've already completed the entire consultation process with the industry. The only matter that is due is the finance clarification by the minister to make these annual fees effective from November. The increase in the increase that has been submitted will improve. Will add in almost 40 million annualized of revenue into the authority. The revenue management, our action plan. The main issue was that the impairment of accounts and poor collection. We've since in June approved submitted the collection policy and the council approved it, and we are continuously implementing that through the regulatory committee, and we use that process of following up the data on an ongoing basis. The other matter that was identified was unknown deposits that reflect in our bank account, because people can deposit money into the account without using proper references. We have, since our action plan is to use communication methods such as SMS technology, we've since realized that the use of SMS technology with business owners is quite effective in that instead of posting letters and so forth. Therefore, the use of SMS is where we indicate to them that your account is so much, use this reference to deposit the money that are due. We have also approached our bank to secure what we call approved beneficiary for EFT. In that way, it will mean that a person who's transferring money, even if they're using internet payment facilities, they'll be forced to use a proper reference, because all the major banks will have defined rules of what the references are supposed to be. We've also looking at the matter of ID verification tools with the bank and weekly bank regulations, which are already in place. These matters, obviously, by their nature, are ongoing, which are supposed to be done on a regular basis so that the improvement is there. We are also seeing bearing fruits of these matters that were already implemented, because people are starting to deposit money in the appropriately. One of the matters that was also raised was the fact that there is inadequate processes and system capabilities. In fact, the Auditor General indicates that our systems are quite complex, meaning our computer system. We've since even appointed a business analyst who is doing a BPR projects. The person was only appointed now in October, and we've commissioned. We've got a plans in place where the information systems projects are underway. This includes case management software, billing, management information systems, and also case and document management systems. The issue on performance management, the matter was that there was inadequate reporting of performance information, and we've already implemented established processes and procedures relating to performance information. We've also implemented employee performance management system. That has already started at executive level, and which is going to be rolled out by January for the rest of the staff. On governance, there was a matter relating to the fact that we don't have a financial disclosure policy. Council has already approved the policy in June 2011, and management and the supply chain officials have already completed that. And for me, that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The legislative developments that we're looking forward to complete is the introduction, introducing the Power Act, the amendments which have been actually in the pipeline now for quite some time. We have completed the policy document and have handed it over to our executive authority to ensure that the necessary processes of dealing with the draft bill with the state law advisors actually takes place. And the activation of the Private Security Limits Act is also another process which we have already started. The introduction of the training regulations. These were the regulations that were actually published in 2003, and there were comments that were made in consultations, and the comments and the comments from the members of the industry are currently being reviewed. I think the biggest hurdle with those regulations was that the regulations were the ones that were actually introducing the National Qualifications Framework curriculum with the in the private security industry, and the aspect which was actually an issue there was the issue of the costs, that the training would have costed the individual security officers more than what they could afford. For instance, the cost was estimated at about 2,000 to 3,000 rand per unit standard, which currently the grade was actually, I think, we are being offered between 150 rands to 300 and so rands. So obviously the cost would have been a very big issue. In fact, there was an outcry regarding the cost issue, which is being resolved. The other project which we're looking forward to in the future, should the legislation, the main legislation go through, is the issue of the renewal of registration, which then means that the registration of all the security officers will lapse, so that we have to revert everyone that is in the system again. However, that is a big project which would require actually the quite a massive capital injection in terms of rolling it out in the entire country. The regulations with regard to that are ready, and the Act enables the regulations. The aspect that need to follow is for the regulations to be put in place, as well as the funds be availed for such a project. And those are the developments in the pipeline, Madam Chair. And that concludes our presentation at this stage, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I can see members already want to ask questions. So we are going to allow members to ask questions. Reverend Mishu, Honorable Angie, Honorable Kola Bernard, Honorable Lisette, Honorable Greg, Honorable Swate, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask four short questions. The first one to the director. When you speak about the infrastructure inspections, do you include inspecting the infrastructure at the boom gates, particularly in residential areas? Because there are guards that are working under very unhealthy conditions. If not, who's ensuring that the working conditions of the guards at the boom gates is accepted? Thank you. And the second one, I want to know how long it takes to process application for firearm licenses. As you know, that with the SEPs, there's been a number of complaints that it is taking sometimes up to more than up to 5 years. So I want to know how long it takes with you to process applications. And to the Deputy Director, when you spoke about key drivers of revenue, you mentioned that you charge a certain amount to register security service providers. You said a certain amount. I'm interested in knowing how much this certain amount is. And my last one, you speak that they cannot be traced. And secondly, on page 27, the amount you have is different from the amount in page 30. In page 27, it's 5,537, and then you also have 6,708. So what is the difference? Because both of them, you say they are untraceable. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. My two questions goes to Mr. Chauke. On your firearms, there is a big problem in the control of firearms in SARS. How do you control, how do you as SARS control firearms? My other question is, you spoke of financial constraints. Can you share with us what you actually mean by financial constraints? Other question goes to Mr. Gek. You spoke of registration of security guards. Now, I want to, I presume you're referring to new registrations. But what I want to know is what happens to the guards who were registered before? Will they be deregistered? What happens to those who had already registered? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. This unqualified report is really quite extraordinary, the way you've turned things around. I actually didn't think you could do it. I really didn't. So it's an enormous achievement, so huge congratulations there. Obviously, I have some questions. I want to know if the former chief executive officer was ever arrested. If you, as I recall, he was running out and burning papers and taking papers and things. What happened with that case? Please fill us in there. The two cases of irregular expenditure you had put forward to the SAPS for investigation, I'd like to know what happened to those cases. And we were told that a debt collection agent had actually been appointed to collect the outstanding debts, which I gather now have more or less all been written off. So I'd like to know what happened, because at the time you were bankrupt or declared yourself, I mean, you were basically bankrupt, and yet you were going to hire a debt collection agency, and I'd like to know if you did, and if so, who paid for it, because you actually had no money at that stage. The vetting was a huge issue. I mean, you had a history of having CEOs with criminal records, I think two in a row. So could you assure us that the vetting is now up to speed, that everyone's been vetted who should be vetted, not only amongst your staff, but obviously the people who are applying for licenses as well? It's a double question there. Tell me also about the Johannesburg lease agreement. There were issues of irregular expenditure there, and I wondered, have you now deregistered yourselves from that? That was a big issue and costing you a lot of money a year ago. And there were huge issues around unallocated deposits. Money was coming in, nobody knew where it was from. So this is not debt you can write off. It's actually money you've received, but nobody had any clue where it was from or who to, you know, to assign it to. I wondered if that money that came in had now been sorted out. And do tell me about the generators. This is one of the most fascinating bits of input last year, that you had bought two generators for both Durban and Eastern Cape offices, and neither of them fit into the premises. So you were stuck with two generators nobody could use. I wonder if you could tell us what happened to the blessed generators. And then of your 8,828 registered and active security businesses on your database, I believe that's the amount in your annual report, how many of those are active? I understand there are a lot of them that will remain dormant for some time. I know there were issues about not writing off or removing dormant companies from your database. I just want to see, you know, how many are actually active, and or do you have huge numbers that are actually going nowhere and paying you nothing? I think that's about it for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
question. Let me take the opportunity also to thank the presentation. You are talking on your page number 5 that you have established the audit committee on November 2010. It's a very, very important committee, audit committee. I need to check with you what criteria did you use to appoint these people, who constituted my second question goes to your page 13 under the chapter. You talk on page 13, you talk about the deployment of inspectors and vacancies within the department. I'm very, very eager to know and to remind us, or to remind yourselves, the vacancy rate. If you have, what is the vacancy rate now? Talking about vacancy within the department. Yes, my last question, I will jump this other question because it has already been asked. You're talking about writing off of debts. For the year 2010, it was 15 million. 2011, 20 million. Now, I'm getting concerned that it's increasing. How do you increase? What is the criteria that you use to incur these debts? Can you please detail that? And it's really worrisome that it's increasing instead of you will be writing more than that. And maybe also you need to who incur the risk. Who are the people that you wrote off the debts? Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Chairperson. I want to. My first question relates to the issue of firearms. Your presentation on page 9 of the presentation indicates quite a large increase. One, in the number of firearm applications declined, and also in the number of firearm applications approved. Now, your annual report gives a little bit of information, but it doesn't go into a lot of detail. I'd like to get an understanding. These applications, this increase in applications, is this from existing security companies, or is this coming from new registered security companies? And as CIRA, are you keeping track of the total number of firearms within the industry? The number of firearms being lost. I see that in the annual report you actually do make mention of some companies who are applying for more firearms than the number of personnel they have. What would be the reason for this? For me it is a bit of a concern. I would have thought that your annual report may have reflected the total number of firearms within the private security industry and had gone into more detail. It doesn't. And that worries me. In your inspections, when you inspect the companies, are we checking on how safely kept these firearms are? Do they have the requisite storerooms, the requisite safes, etc.? What's the amount of ammunition floating around in these private security companies? I really think we need a little bit more information, and that's why I'm asking the questions on that. I want to just say that I agree very much with the question asked by the Honourable Meshwe, the Reverend Meshwe, in terms of the conditions under which many of these security guards operate. I can certainly say in my own area that I live in suburbs around there, when you drive through these boom gates, you often wonder how these security guards manage in winter, how they manage with ablution facilities, how they even manage with refreshments, etc. And so I want to agree with that, and I think it's an area that does need to be looked at. My last area, Chairperson, really relates to the financial situation of Syria. Now, your deficit has increased significantly over that of 2010, where you sit at a deficit now of, for the year, the last financial year, of $23 million. Your revenue has very slightly increased, you say, although if I look at registrations, there is about 3,000 odd more registrations, if I've read the annual report correctly. And I'm just wondering how it is that your income from registrations has increased so marginally, but there has been an increase in new registrations over the previous financial year. If you could explain that to me. But the thing that worries me, and that is that your operating expenses have jumped. There's some issues you've raised in terms of employee benefits, etc. But it does worry me, because if your income is not increasing, surely you should be taking very stringent measures to curb your costs. So I think we need to understand, given the financial situation, your end, what is it that you're putting in place now? You've spoken about increase of fees, etc. But what steps are you taking to reduce your expenses, because otherwise we're going to see a continuation and an increasing deficit over the next few years, and that's a bit worrying. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. I need to ask a question of clarity from the Deputy Director with regard to the registration. Because on slide number 24, it's indicating here that in 2010 you had 12.7 million. Now you have registered 7.9 million. And it shows that there is a decline from the volume of SOMSP. 38% registration decline. I just want to find out, why is this actually happening? Are those people not having confidence in the in Syria? Why is it this decline? I just need to find out from there. So why? Because I think this is a concern to me. And the second question is also on page 26, slide 26. Also to be responded by the Deputy Director with regard to the cash resource declined by 10.7 million to 18.2 million. I actually also want to understand correctly what is actually happening here. Because according to me, I think the decline by 10.7 million really is a lot of money. I think maybe it will actually affect the organization. So I just need you to expatiate on that. Tell us why, what is happening, why this is happening. And my last question is with regard to the irregular expenditure. Yeah, here you, on slide number 28, it is also said that you used a cash transit service to the headquarters and the regional offices. But on the other hand, you are also saying that you don't see any reason why, there is no reason to believe that the authority suffered a loss. So my question is that if you used that service, doesn't mean that you were not actually paying for that service. If you are saying that you didn't lose anything with regard to that. So I just also want to find out why is this statement like this, because the also coming from the Auditor General that actually they wanted to find out. And if you are saying there was no loss, it seems maybe you are getting a free service. So I just want to find out. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I must first also congratulate Sarah for this unqualified audit. But I just got two questions. The one is, I know they were here on the 31st of May, and the picture they gave was very, very gloomy. Now my question is, does that mean now that because this audited report is up to the 31st of March, and the picture they gave on the 31st of this year was saying a lot of things that are not good. Amongst them, infiltration of the security industry by sophisticated criminals, increase of the number of illegal, all those things which they mentioned, which gave us a picture that this organization is in serious trouble. Now, does that mean that after this report, the situation is good? Well, or what is it that it means? The other one is the issue which has been mentioned by many of my colleagues, the issue of an increasing deficit. What does that mean? Somebody, there are laws in this country that govern any business that is run on that basis. What does the National Treasury say when you put this dramatic increase of deficit from 2 million to 23? Surely somewhere else the Companies Act and other things should get involved. The last question, Madam Chair, is this untraceable security service providers. In your report, page 23, you say you determine this thing by visiting known addresses of the business and owners and directors, and then you say inquiring to the neighboring business, and you say calling all numbers. And after that, you regard that as untrustworthy. My question is now, if these are security companies, surely they've got firearms, some of them. Now you say, okay, write them off. What about the firearms which they have? Does the matter end there for your report, or do you report this to the police? Because you're talking here of people now who've got firearms who all of a sudden have disappeared. Now, what do? You just say, okay, it's untraceable, we deregister it? What about, do you have any system of investigating either by you or by the police? Because it's very easy to close office and operate from home. And especially people who have got many homes. People who have got houses in town. So from what you go to a owner's director's house, you go to identify the person has moved to where he stays. Masabati, you know, nobody will see. He operates from Masabati, nobody can trace him, but he operates. But my query is the arms they have. Are you able now to trace, because those are firearms, which could also be used for illegal purposes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to dispute that, although I stay in Pietermaritzburg, Masabatin is one of the area in my province. And Chairperson, my question is, how many firearm-related contravention have you found in this financial year? How many firearm-related contraventions? The second question, Chairperson, is that in those numbers, have you identified fraud or foreign nationals within that number? If you have a number, if you don't have a number, it's fine. last question, Chairperson, is the corruption. What happened to those members of CERA who has been suspended for allegation of corruption? Where are they, and how far the cases are, and how long they will take? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, while one needs to welcome the unqualified report, I think the, and since we now have an unqualified report, it's time to move on to the next part of what CERA should be reporting on. Because the matter of the fact is that if I look at this report, there's no way that any of us have an idea of what the status of the private security industry in South Africa is. And I think that is part of why we raise certain questions, because it's CERA's responsibility strategically to give us an indication of what the state of the private security industry in South Africa is. We're talking about new legislation, we're talking about redefining the private security industry in South Africa. We need to base that on the information that we are going to get from CERA. And in that regard, I think that information is lacking from the report. For instance, and I want to give examples of what I mean, or ask questions about what I mean, and hopefully in that way it will become clear as well. I think also if you look, as bad as some of these previous councils and things were, if you look at previous reports, it did give us an indication of where we stand. And I think there's power in it as well. There's power for CERA in it. If you publish, like they used to do in these reports, the companies that did not comply to the CERA regulations. If you publish the companies that were issued fines and did not pay, all those information are relevant information, and is information that must also inform the public out there when they make a choice about which security company they are going to appoint. But it also strengthens CERA's hand in terms of name and shame around that. Now, if you look at, and I think that was the intention of the original legislation in any case, was it's supposed to be a regulating authority, and part of your strength does not only lie in legislation, but it lies in the fact that you can name those companies that actually do not perform. If you look at the issue of the fees and fines on page 23, for instance, it basically just gives us numbers. It doesn't tell us how many fines are we talking about. You know, what were the total? You give us the totals that you've in. But what were the total fines issued? Against how many companies? Were they repeat offenders? You know, is it the same companies doing the same kind of wrong over and over again? What are we talking about here? Because those are the issues that I think is important. So we don't have a figure to measure the fees that you've entered, the fines that you've in, against the fines that are actually, that you've issued during that year. But also the more qualitative information in terms of, we're talking about the same company who's responsible for 30% of fines. Then we all know there's something wrong and it needs to be looked at. I also am concerned about just giving us figures in terms of new registrations. In the end, I don't have a problem if CERA say we've received 10,000 new registrations, but we only issued 1,000. And there are good reasons for it, because you're the regulating authority. If you've got any suspicion that this company should not be in business, it's up to you to make sure that they do not get the business license. I'm also worried, Chairperson, about the change of targets. And I hear the issue about it being in line with Treasury regulations, etc. But the fact of the matter is, every one of those reasons that you give to us on page 10 are also a requirement when setting targets. Your target, when you set it, is supposed to be in line with your budget. It should speak to your budget. You should have the funds to support it. You should set achievable targets. So while I hear what you say, that it's in line with Treasury, that you can change it, it's not, it's what we need to measure you against. And if you are going to change your targets because Treasury allows for changing of targets, what do we measure you against? Because then, middle of the year, you just change your targets so that you can achieve your targets. That can never be done. So I would request, Chair, that CIRA look at this issue very, very carefully, because we cannot accept again then an annual performance plan, a strategic plan that does not have achievable targets that speaks to the budget either, because that also is an indication of the work that we need to do. Jefferson, there's a bit of uncertainty about how many staff members you have, because your figures do not add up. In some places they talk about 204, in some places they talk about 207. So can we get a clear indication around what is your actual staff figures? Your annual report figures on different tables are not adding up. And then last question from my side is around the training of CETA staff. Ach, CETA. CETA's working on my nerves. CETA staff. While we have a report in terms of training opportunities, we don't have a report in terms of the outcome of those training initiatives. You know, or is it a question you attend the training and you've passed the training? So I would just like to have some clarification in that regard as well. Can I also ask then for the council whether the council's feeling is that it's now functioning better than it used to function?
So, Chair, just something that the Honourable Van Wyk has raised about the fact that CIRA will really need to start to evaluate the industry. And, you know, I think also that one of the other things that we would need to start to see or get information about is just the trends within the industry. You know, there's continuously mergers and acquisitions, etc. That's some of the information. The number of security companies per province. And because sometimes I actually, in my own area, keep on seeing new companies, some of them with shocking cars, poor infrastructure, and you wonder whether this is not also becoming a money-making industry. Because one of the things that the insurance industry requires, to be insured adequately, you have to have an alarm. And if you put an alarm, generally those are linked to security companies. And it'd be interesting to get that in understanding. Also, what contribution are they actually making in reducing crime? And there you would have to start looking at response times, a whole range of things, as to whether they're actually playing a role or whether we're being misled as citizens of the country by the role that these security companies play. And I think that's part of the evaluation that we would need to start to see coming out as to whether really they're actually making an impact.
Excuse me, Chair, could I just ask clarity from Honourable Van Wyk with regard to whether the Council believes it is now functioning, or is it the Council or you mean CIRA?
No, thank you very much, members. With regard to firearms, I just want to check really. I think many of the questions which I had regarding this were already asked by members. But I just want to check, do you have specific firearms that different companies are qualified to have? I'm asking this question because, you know, over the weekend I attended some function and there were companies with different firearms, any firearm you've seen and never seen. So and I just want to check really whether there are firearms that companies affiliated to yourselves qualify to have and do not qualify to have. I'm asking that question. And maybe one other question would be, what were the staff to security ratio during the financial year in question, that is 2010-11, what was the ratio? Because I think some of the discussion is coming from the staff that you have and it's just true that we think the information that we see is that that's reliable. When we met in March 2011, and just to be specific, it was on the 3rd of March in 2011, you stated that 5 employees had been suspended on allegations of corruption. 5 were dismissed for dishonesty, and investigations were pending in respect of 4 senior employees regarding alleged dishonest behavior. But these totals are not reflected anywhere in your annual report. And the question would be why, but can you tell us as to what then happened in this regard? I'm not sure whether this question has been asked, but you indicated in a report that there was evaluation of skills, audit, and staff morale. In fact, in fact, of skills audit, and we want to know as to what has been the outcome of that of such an exercise. On your inspections, probably this question has also been asked. But really, I want to know I'm interested to know, what is it that you inspected? Because this question has been asked by many members. What is it that you are actually inspecting? And when you conduct the inspection, you find that the situation is not conforming to what you expect it to be, what then do you do? Just there and there. And really we're asking these questions because we do visit these areas and we think many of the work conditions of members that are affiliated to yourself sometimes are very poor. And what are you doing about that? And I think the issue of the abuse of that has been raised by the portfolio committee on several occasions in terms of salaries, in terms of long hours they work without compensation, in terms of overtime that is not paid, in terms of everything, you know, being dismissed without notice, no benefits, and so on and so forth. What is actually happening in that regard? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm offering you that we can take a very short break until 25 to 12, then we'll come back. 25 to 12. Whether we are here or not, you start talking at 25 to 12.
I don't want to. Chinese fund again. Thank you.